You might like to open your Bible to Psalm number 9. And perhaps we can look to the Lord in a word of prayer. Our Father and God, we look to you to set apart these moments in the light of all that lies ahead. And our God, thou knowest. So, and help us to have understanding that we might have the benefit as we proceed into time. And our God, we're going to thank you very much. In Christ's name, amen. In our exercise of what we're doing in Revelation, a little bit in chapter 5. Now, in the light of the day in which we live, as we're sitting there, now I have, this is from the ARP, new issue of ARP. And in the process, there's two articles. One is, our kids are in trouble. Kids are in trouble. And I'll just give you the social media pandemic, the vast cultural changes have left a generation anxious and depressed. And the system designed to support them and us is in tatters. We have no way to support them. We cause the problem, we make the problem, and we're complaining about the problem. We make it. And in the same paper, why must we care about American teens? Never in modern history, American history, have the rates of teen depression, loneliness, and even suicide been so high. Now, that's the articles. And so, looking at that, our world is in trouble. And when we think of having our little world, where you live, where you go to work, all that stuff, what you eat, we do that. And we have a little circle we draw in it. But you aren't in China. You aren't in other places. And it isn't like that. And your little world, our little world, right next door is another world. People are all living. And when you feel you're good and all right, there's a whole world that doesn't. So therefore, we live in a world that is what? Very cruel and very hard. That's the world we live in, for real. And if you're going to really look at it, looking down at the big picture, it's very real. If you go to countries, Venezuela, Brazil, Africa, India, China, where do you want to go? Europe, where do you want to go? It's not good. Now, you need this a little bit to remind yourself. I'm going back into history now, and here's David in Psalm 9. And Psalm 9 and 10 belong together, by the way, so keep that in mind, 9, 10. So, when we come to Psalm 9, and Psalm 9, David says, in verse 1, I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart. I will show forth all thy marvelous works. Now, having said that, and keeping that in mind, picking up, please, verse 7. But the Lord shall endure forever. He hath prepared in the light of all wickedness and everything. The Lord shall endure forever. He hath prepared his throne for judgment. And he shall judge the world in righteousness. He shall minister judgment to the people in uprightness. The Lord also will be a refuge at the same time for the oppressed, a refuge in times of trouble. trouble, and in the process, verse 10, and they that know thy name shall put their trust in thee. Why? For thou, Lord, hast not forsaken them that seek thee. So in the midst of it all, this troubled world, with all that's going on and happening at the moment, keep in mind, if you would, that God is able to help. People have all kinds of problems and serious problems and lots of things to be sad and cry about, etc. But one of the reasons, if you're going to sum up, try to find a solution, two words at least. One is, for all the different conditions and circumstances, is we don't have hope. We don't have a healthy expectancy, hope. Not only is hope missing, but help is missing, H-E-L-P. Hope, we need hope, and we need help. And when we don't have hope, and we don't have help, boy, things are hard. Because the world is dominating the prince, the power of the air, the devil himself. Now, having said that, sliding over, if I can, in verse 16, Psalm 9:16, the Lord is known by the judgment which he executeth. The wicked is snared in the work of his own hands. Haganon, Philon. Verse 17, the wicked shall be turned into hell, and all the nations that forget God. For the needy shall not always be forgotten. The expectation of the poor shall not perish forever. That's help. All these things that you're reading, that's the world we live in. That'll help you when we get to Revelation. Verse 19, arise, O Lord, let not man prevail. Let the heathen nations be judged in thy sight. Put them in fear, O Lord. Why? That the nations may know themselves to be but men. They're no more than just flesh and blood, the flower of the field, here today and gone tomorrow. Help us, help the people to know we're just men, just human. Now, verse 10, in the light of that, here's David looking at his world that he lives in. And in that world that he lives in is a whole nother kind of existence that's out there. Therefore, chapter 10, sliding if I can, verse 3, the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire, and blesseth the covetous, whom the Lord abhorreth. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. His ways are always grievous. Thy judgments are far above, out of sight, says the wicked man. God doesn't see, God doesn't care. Keep reading verse 5. The ways are always grievous. The judgments are far above, out of sight. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. In other words, the world's there and very proud. They're able to handle the problems of their life and their enemies. And God doesn't care, and God isn't going to do anything. So therefore, verse 6, he has said in his heart, I will not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity. In other words, my life's just going to sail along, wonderfully so, dominating, doing what I do. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. He sitteth in the lurking places of the villages to pounce on, to gain advantage wherever he can. In the secret places doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privily set against the poor. He lieth in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lieth in wait to catch the poor. He doth catch the poor when he draweth him into net. Yes, take advantage. Back to these articles. What have we got? Young teens. What are they being in that you didn't have that are older? They have being brought up with the electronic world, cell phones and smartphones, whatever, all the stuff they have. And it isn't what they're looking, what they're putting out. It's all that's coming in. And they can't, it's there. Once you open the door to the bad guys are coming in. And the using your all of that electronic stuff opens the door for all the bad guys to come in. And the young people, what do you do in a cuckoo world? We don't know what sex we are. We don't know what we are. We don't know who we are. We don't know a thousand things that are absolutely absurd between the educational system and the political system. A, B, religious system. That feeds all the whole ball of wax of people. The education, politics, and religion. And we're caught in it. Now, and that's an awesome thing. And that's why these articles are written. And you and I need to know and we're being reminded of it. It's no picnic out there now. It's very hard. So therefore, in Psalm 10, sliding over if I can, to verse 11, he has said in his heart, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face. He will never see what we do, how we do, what we do to gain the edge, to have the advantage. God doesn't care now. And so therefore, verse 13, wherefore doth the wicked condemn God? He has said in his heart, thou will not require it. God will not judge. Now, what do we do in the last two or three times? We reminded ourselves of what? In the end, when you come to go over to Malachi, the end of the Old Testament, remember? And when you come to Malachi in chapter 2, as you remember, just to be reminded, 2 and 17, last book in the Old Testament, you have wearied the Lord with your words. Yet ye say, wherein? God, wherein did we weary thee? When you say, every one that doeth evil is good in the sight of the Lord. And he delighteth, God delights in people doing evil. Where, by the way, is the God of judgment? There is no God of judgment. That's what we say. And when you come to the end of the Old Testament, you remember it, verse 16, chapter 3. Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and thought upon his name. God had a book, as it has a book. And here's everything going wrong. God, here's a handful of believers, remnant, at any given time in the Old Testament. And the fear of God, they feared God. The world doesn't fear God, but they feared God. And God said, I'll never forget you. I'll never forget you. I'll write it down. You can count on it. I'm not going to forget. Nope. And then we end Malachi chapter 4, verse 6, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to their children and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest going, looking avoidant, trying to avoid something, lest I come, you're trying to avoid something, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. I'm going to bring judgment, but you don't believe. And then we did all those things in Peter and that. And Peter, where is the promise of his coming? And we went through all of those things, and so he promised he isn't coming, he's never coming, he never does anything about anything. Now, that's the kind of thing you need to keep in mind, because here's the Apostle John, last living apostle, and he's looking at what Paul and Peter did not look at in the same way. Paul and Peter are back here the church is going apostasy and everything. They're back here. John's up here. John's looking at it. The Jerusalem, the temple's been down 70 AD. It's 20, 30 years have gone by. He's looking at the devastation of the church. He's looking at that. He's on this Isle of Patmos, prison island. He's on that. And he looks at that. And then God put him there to write Revelation and the Gospel of John, etc. Now, so having said that, John's looking at that. So he's seeing something. I'm trying to set it so when you get to Revelation 5 here, hang on. Anyway, in the process, John is seeing this. And it isn't very pleasant. The church isn't coming out good. The world isn't coming out good. Persecution's rising. It's not good. It's not a good thing. And God's going to take us home, rapture, at any moment. To John, that would be true. And you remember John, John said, to remember that, in John 21 and that, what did he say? The Lord said, listen, Peter, you're going to die by crucifixion. But John, and Peter wants to know, what about that guy, John? And the Lord Jesus said, you remember, if I want him to stay here till I come, can't I do that? I'm going to let you get crucified, and I may come and take him just like that at the rapture. That's for John. That's 100 AD, 95 AD. That's interesting. And all these years have gone by. You say, well, all these things have to happen prophetically. True. But time isn't the issue from God's point of view. Everything has to happen in order. And in the process, when you look at things, and say, well, God, you come look at the world. The world is horrible. It's going to be more horrible. That's what it's going to be. But God is going to come at the right time. God could have come way back there, way back then. And look at how many centuries would have gone by waiting for his coming. I mean, if he didn't come, John, here we are, we're that further down the highway of time compared to John back there in 100 AD, approximately. Now, having said that, keeping that in mind, if you would, so therefore, over if you can, please, to the gospel of Revelation, the good news of Revelation. If I can. So, in Revelation, picking up, please, in chapter, I'll read verse 1, just to put it where we have moved to. And I saw in the right hand, this is the Apostle John, looking, God has put him up, given him the raising him up to see everything that's going on in God's most wonderful way, in order for him to be the recording, write all of these things down, which is what we're seeing he's writing. I saw in the right hand of him that sat on the throne a book written within and on the backside, sealed with seven seals. So here's the scroll that's rolled up, and the scroll is there. It's written on both sides of the scroll, as we shared and showed, on both sides of the scroll, and the scroll is wonderfully sealed in seven different, as you try to unroll it, seven places. As you try to unroll it. So you got to break the seal each time to roll to the next section. And in the process, verse 2, and I saw, said John, I saw not only in God's hand, God the Father's hand, and God doesn't have a hand, but he's using language that helps us. And here's the scroll, so here's the book, unopened book, scroll. Verse 2, I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, who is worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof? And here's the angel, here's John looking, he's there, and here's an angel going and saying, who is worthy, here's the sealed book in the hand of God, and John wants to know, as the angel is saying, he's saying, who is worthy? Remember, the word worthy means to balance, to raise up the arm, think of a scale, and the scale, and to make the scale balance. In other words, how do you know how much something weighs till you balance it? You don't know how much anything weighs till you balance the scale. All the stuff that's going on. And the world says God never is going to weigh it. He's never going to judge it. He's never going to do anything. No one's going to balance the scale. No one's going to balance the scale. Who is worthy to balance the scale? That's the angel. That's his question. But he doesn't give any answer. So here's John listening, the angel. And in the process, the angel gives this question, verse 2. And then, verse 3, and no man in heaven, nor in earth, neither under the earth, that sort of covers all the bases, under the earth, was able to open the book, neither to look thereon. So here's the angel asking a question and answering it in the sense, there's no one, there's no human able to do this. No one able to do it with no answer. And now that's hard. Because John, remember we shared all the background, he's on the Isle of Patmos, and he's seeing the apostasy and the thing all going down a drain way back then, on its way down, and he knows that. And here's the world clapping their hands and saying, judgment, God's never going to do the Antichrist. We know that because he knew all these things from Thessalonians and all the rest of it. He knew the Antichrist was going to come, etc., play God, and all of that. It was what's going to happen to the Israel. What's going to happen to the people that I know that aren't saved? You're going to take us up, and that's the atmosphere here in chapter 5. And here they all are down there, my family, my friends, people that aren't saved. And the judgment's coming, but they don't believe anything. They don't care. They aren't even thinking. So now, having said that, that's sad. You didn't see. The whole thing's going to not work out. You went and died on the cross, and it's wonderful that we're able to be taken up to God's heaven. But what's going to happen to the thing? All of the wonderful things you said, God, about a kingdom and heaven and all of these wonderful, awesome things. But where are they? Where are they, God? With us and all the, how can we, looking at comparison, wow, it's not good. How can we have this good and all this bad is down there? Shouldn't the bad be fixed, as we shared last time? Shouldn't things, all the stuff, everything that we did, all that, remember? If things happen, things, why isn't right, why aren't things ever made right? 1,000,000,000,000 things go wrong right now in the world. Bad decisions, bad everything, not good. It's never fixed. The bad guy seems to keep winning, and the good guy gets clobbered. We're living in that now in our own country. Wow, that's where it is. That doesn't look fair. Doesn't look good. So therefore, John, you could understand. I haven't even touched the problem, and you would understand it better than I do. It's an awesome problem. And therefore, John, even where he is, looking at the scroll, looking at all of the angels, et cetera, and then remembering, because he's got all of this from down below, he'd just been brought up, not like Paul. Paul was taken up in 2 Corinthians 12 to the third heaven, and that was an awesome thing. And God brought him back, because it wasn't time to go yet for him, and God brought him back and then made him handicapped with his eyesight, etc., so that he couldn't glory in what he saw. Because you people wouldn't want him to live with you because he's so out of it. Wow! He lives in another world. That's right. But God said, I'm going to take that so you can't remember that, John. Paul, you aren't going to remember that. But John has got it. So therefore, John, we come as we're looking. And I'll read verse 3 again. And no man in heaven, nor under the earth, was able to open the book, neither to look thereon. And I wept much because no man was found worthy to open and to read the book, neither to look thereon. There was no one. The angel never gave him a help. He just said, there's no one going to do it. There's no one that's worthy. No one can balance the scale. No one can fix this. So he wept. He wept much. So when we're reading, he wept much. When he's reading, he wept. And it means to wail, to weep, implying tears. It has to do with every kind of external, internal kind of conditions of grief and everything. To say it easier, I guess, he was torn apart. He was looking, and he wept. He wept sorely. Wow. Now, having done that and keeping that in mind as he wept, and you can understand that. I'm trying to help you understand a little bit of what he was doing. And we live in the same world. Now, we can maybe block it out, which is what the people do, the people that are anti-police and anti-everything. They go and build a wall and have a fort and then have 25 bodyguards with machine guns. So they're fine when they go to the grocery store, you see. But the rest, we don't have any guns. We don't have any thing like that. We're subject to the bad guys coming in, and the bad guys are there. In fact, this is just a little thing of all these different things. In the news the other day when I was listening to it, from San Diego, and I can't be right. I pushed it back. They had, in San Diego, from the drugs coming across the border, you won't believe this, 147,000 pounds of fentanyl, whatever that stuff is. 147,000, not 100, 1,000 pounds. Can you imagine the pile that is of colored pills? Wow. That's awesome, isn't it? I think that is. You have to build a building just to house that. You know what I mean? Well, you know, what can I tell you? Now, so in the process, here's John. And John is all weeping. And in the process, doing that, so you understand he's weeping. Now, I'm going to go and put a little something in front of that. Go with me, please, over to the Gospel of Luke. And in chapter 24, Luke in chapter 24. Because you're going to ask, I'm sure you might think of it, John, why would you even cry? You're there where everything is working out. You have to know it works out. Why would you do that? Because God, in his wonderful way of teaching, blinds the mind sometime so that you'll see better. Blind to see better. God said, why don't you give me the answer? No. You have to struggle. Why? To see better. You'll understand better. John, here he is, weeping. Luke chapter 24. Our Lord, after his resurrection, you'll notice in verse, he's the Emmaus Road kind of thing, in verse 16. But here's the two people walking together. And I'll read verse 14. And they talked together of all these things which had happened. Verse 16. And it came, well, I got to read verse 15. It came to pass that while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. That's sort of neat, I think. But their eyes were beholden, that they should not know him. Now, he's just resurrected body, and you know what? They're right there chatting with each other, and he comes along, and Journey walks along with them. And you'd say, well, you should surely know. No, God blocked it. He's going to exercise them. And therefore, he wants to know why. Verse 17, he said unto them, what manner of communications are these that you have one to another as you walked and are sad? How come you're so sad? That's what he asked him. You know, they're busy. And then they tell him. And verse 18, and one of them, whose name was Cleopas, said unto him, art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem? And hast thou not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? And he said unto them, what things? I thought that's pretty neat. What things? And they said unto him concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all his people. And of course, as you know, keep reading, he hid them. And finally, when you come down, he asked them, what did you know? What do you know about the Bible? What do you know about prophecy? What do you know about what God said? Did you ever read your Bible? Do you go to the synagogue and listen? Yeah, okay. Sliding down. And verse 24. And certain of them which were with us went into the sepulchre and found it even so, empty sepulchre, as the women had said, but him they sought. And in other words, it's an empty tomb. Now, what would that tell you? You have put a big rock in front of it, 8,000-pound rock or whatever, big rolling rock, and you put the rock in, and you did that, and it's an empty tomb. Now, wouldn't you, what are you walking away stupid about it for? You should say, wow. But they don't, because, 22:25. Then he said unto them, O fools, and slow of heart to believe, all that the prophets have spoken, ought not Christ to have suffered these things, and to enter into his glory? And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. And finally they woke up. Wow. But you know what? God blocked all that. He made them rethink everything that they should have understood. Why can't you just tell me? Because you don't have an ear. You aren't ready to hear it. That's why you could sit in church, if you went to churches, sit there for 10 years, 20 years, and you could read Revelation and different things, Romans chapter 6, etc. You can do all of that. And 10 years later, it finally dawns on you. Finally dawns. 10 years ago, I read some of the things, looking back, I had said things 59 years ago when I came. I said the same thing. The same thing. I would say more, but that's all there is. I say the same thing all the time. What can I tell you? Now, so in the process, God does that. Do it again so you see it. Over, if I can, to John and chapter 20. And in John chapter 20, picking up in thought. If I can, John chapter 20, picking up, please, in verse 11. And this is Mary now. Chapter 20, verse 14. But Mary stood at the sepulchre, weeping. And she wept, and as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre, empty. And she seeth two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet, where the body was. That's impressive just in itself. Where the body of Jesus had been laid. Verse 13. And they say unto her, woman, why are you weeping? Why are you weeping? John, why are you weeping? Hang on. John's weeping. So, woman, why are you weeping? She said unto them, because they have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. And she then went through all the thing, and I'll read verse 14. And when she had thus said, she turned herself back and saw Jesus standing, and knew not that it was Jesus. You would think she would know, but she don't know. And verse 15, Jesus saith unto her, woman, why weepest thou? Whom seekest thou? And she supposed him to be the gardener, without saying unto him, sir, if thou have borne him hence, tell me where thou have taken the body, laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus said unto her, Mary. She turned herself and said unto him, Rabboni, which is to say, Master. Jesus saith unto her, touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren, and say unto them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, not our Father. There's a difference. My Father and your Father. It's not our Father. Different. Jesus Christ has a unique relationship to God as God. I don't have that, and you don't have that. So, he's our Father, but not the same way. Now, so therefore, my Father and my God and your God, same thing. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, God is not, he hid himself. He did that. So God, if a lesson that may help you, that's what happens to us. And sometimes we wish we knew things and we don't. And even if we knew them, even if we're told them, we could sit and hear the Romans 6 10 times in a row, and it never sinks in. Never sinks in. One day it does. Wow. You see? Here's all these wonderful things. So we're exercised. And in the process, God helps us to learn. One other place, while I'm still looking at it, over to John chapter 11. And in John chapter 11, may I pick up, please, in verse 31. John 11, 31, Lazarus has died, remember, from all of that. The Jews which were with her in the house and comforted her when they saw Mary, that she arose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, she goeth unto the grave to weep there. In other words, we're all going to go and cry. We're all going to go to the grave and cry, because that's what you do, go to the grave and cry. Verse 22. But when Mary was come, where Jesus was and saw him and fell down, and Mary fell down and saw him, and she fell at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, this is before the cross, if thou had been here, he crossed the Jordan to come to them, and he stayed purposely behind so that Lazarus would die. He purposely wanted Lazarus to die, and you'll remember that. Over again, in chapter 11, I don't mean to do it, verse 4, 11, 4. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. God's going to do a wonderful thing with this event, with this Lazarus. And Lazarus, and then you read in verse 14, and then said Jesus unto them, plainly, Lazarus is dead. So before we cross the Jordan, I want you to know, I waited. And by the way, when we go across the Jordan to the house, he's dead. So we don't need to hurry, but we're going there. He's dead. Now, that's the background. And why are you weeping? And they're weeping. So verse 33, when Jesus therefore saw her weeping, Mary, and the Jews also weeping, everyone's crying, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? Now he already knew, of course. Where have they laid them? And they said unto him, come, Lord, come and see. And they're going to show him where they put him in the sepulcher, in the grave. And then, verse 35, the little short verse that you can remember, Jesus wept. He wept. He didn't weep for Lazarus. He wept because they were so out of it. I am the resurrection and the life, etc., etc. If you just believed, you would never have a problem. But you don't believe. He wept. That's very sad. When his people should know better. And they don't. John, why are you weeping? Why? Because no one can open a book. Have you forgot about God? You forgot about it all? What's wrong with you? And Jesus wept because of their unbelief. They should have known better. What a sad thing it is to have all the resources for the hope and the help that you need, and you never exercise it. What's the sense? What's the sense? That's a sad thing. Jesus wept. Now, having said that, little exercise, back over to John, Revelation, and chapter 5. Revelation and chapter 5. That little thing we just did is worth it all. To understand, God doesn't tell you everything. He doesn't want, you have to learn. And when you don't understand and you can't see, hang in there. Hang in there. You'll get it. But you got to wait. You got to wait. You got to want it. Want it. And the more once you get breakthrough, I'm telling you from experience, once you break through this, there's no end to it. There's no end to the immense movement of all of these truths. It's an awesome thing. So you want to break through and get there. Wow. I'm telling you. Now, Revelation chapter 5. And may I pick up, please, if I can. Verse 4, I wept much because no man was found worthy to open the balance of scale, etc., to read the book and to end, neither to look thereon. And one of the elders, this is one of the elders, I can't do any of that now. One of the elders saith unto me, 24 elders that were sitting around where God was holding the book, weep not, stop weeping, command, stop. Stop crying. Stop. I've had to say that to people, you know. You say, I've got a butt sad. I said, stop it. This is a saved person. I wouldn't have said it otherwise. Saved person. What are you crying for? Give me a reason and I'll cry with you. Give me the reason. And you calmed down, didn't you? You calmed down because you had to think about what you were doing. That's what you need to do. Think about it and fix it. There's no need. There's no need to see. You need to see. Therefore, in verse 5, and one of the elders saith unto me, weep not, stop crying. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof. God's wonderful, 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 wonderful thing. He is the, I have a little thing that you won't think. He's the Lion. And I can't do it all. It's a wonderful thing. And you'll never see it back there. I got them. You can't see that. He's the Lion. Who's a lamb? But he's a Lion. He's a Lion. And you better believe it. I got to quit. You got it? That's awesome. That's awesome. But I'm going to be a little lamb. So watch me go. Watch what I do. Not as a lion. As a little lamb. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show and demonstrate how awesome this is. I became a baby and no one wanted to know and care. I'm now going to go and be a little lamb, and you better care. You got it?